Friends, you are welcome to your seat. Please, your own seat. Can you close that door, please? Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Nakhchavani.
We left off with the establishment of Baha'i courts in the key chief cities of the Islamic East. And I told you that the House of Justice considers itself committed to, for example, a goal like this, which continues to remain pending, continues to remain unaccomplished. And there are a number of such goals that we are going to come across in the 10-year crusade, goals which were not possible to accomplish. But then if the situation in these countries like Iran and Egypt and Iraq, etc., etc., that they change and they become secular, then the whole situation also changes. Because if a country becomes completely secular, it may very well abolish all religious courts, and all religious courts will simply become civil courts. So in such a case, in such a situation, this goal will not be possible to accomplish at all. So, but in the situation as it used to be in 1953, because he wanted to ensure that the Baha'i community has equal rights as other religious communities, he included them here. But if the situation changes, naturally, many of this particular goal will not be possible to accomplish. And as you know, in Shoghi Effendi, in God Passes By, if you read the end of chapter 2 of God Passes By, the last two paragraphs refer to Tahereh and refer to the unveiling of Tahereh in the conference in Badasht. And he says this was like a trumpet call which announced the beginning of a process of the abolition of the Sharia law in Muslim countries. So the Sharia law, which is the canonical law, the Islamic law, based on the Quran, based on traditions, based on the behavior of the Prophet, etc., etc., which was formulated after the life of Muhammad, after the passing of Muhammad, maybe 200, 300 years later, this canonical law, which is known as Sharia law, has certain requirements. One of them was the veiling of women. So this is not clearly stated in the Quran. The Quran does not clearly state that women should be veiled. This was incorporated in the canonical law, in the Sharia law, which is not the same thing as the text of the Quran. It is an interpretation of the Quran, plus based on the Quran, as I said, plus on traditions. Some of the traditions have doubtful authentication, have doubtful validity. And of course the behavior of Muhammad himself. So they tried to put this canonical law into existence. And Shoghi Effendi says, when Tahereh lifted her veil, she was breaking a law of the Sharia. Therefore, this was the beginning of the annulment of this Sharia law. It's a process. And he says this process will continue on until it will end in the secularization of the Muslim states of the Middle East. If you read the end, as I said, of chapter 2, the last two paragraphs of God Passes By, you see how Shoghi Effendi's vision is about the future. Now, if that is the case, and it will be the case, then this particular goal about courts, there will be no point at that time to carry it out, to implement it. But as I said, 1953 under the conditions that existed at the time. This is how he formulated this particular goal. The next goal, number 12, is the extension of the international Baha'i endowments in the Holy Land, and the explanation which has been given is adequate, and you can see how much more property was acquired. The construction of the international Baha'i archives in the neighborhood of the Bab Sepulchre, you can see what has been explained here. The importance of the archives building is not the fact that we just have a building where we can have our tablets and our historical records and our holy relics preserved. It's not only that. It is that, of course, but it's not only that. It is this, Shoghi Effendi attached importance to this building, is that it is the beginning of this buildings around the ark. He created this ark, and he started this building of the archives. And he said, this is going to develop, and this will be the administrative center of the faith. It's the ark that Baha'u'llah spoke of in the Tablet of Carmel. The Universal House of Justice is at the top, and these the buildings are on both sides. So it was the beginning of this process of establishing the administrative center of the faith on Mount Carmel. The next item is construction of the tomb of the wife of the Bab in Shiraz. Now, the question number 14, number 15, number 16, all of them are goals that have to do with historical figures of our faith as well as historical sites and sacred sites of our faith to be acquired or for some of these very important historical figures such as the wife of the Bab, for example, under number 14, the mother of the Bab, the cousin of the Bab, the transfer of their remains, and the construction of appropriate resting places for them, as well as the acquisition of properties. For example, here we see under number 16, acquisition of the Garden of Rizwan in Baghdad, the site of the Siyah Chal in Tehran, the site of the martyrdom of the Bab in Tabriz, and his incarceration in Chehriq. So you see, these are properties that Shoghi Effendi wanted to see that the Baha'is acquire them. Now, under certain conditions, this was not possible. In those days, under the regime that existed at that time, for the Baha'is to do this. In Iran, it became worse with the revolution, with Khomeini and all this. It became even more difficult. And it is still, of course, very, very difficult. They are still, the latest thing is that they have desecrated the, let us say, the cemetery in Yazd. They went there and broke all the stones and desecrated the cemeteries. So we are suffering under such a regime. How is it possible for us to go ahead and acquire the site of the martyrdom of the Bab? The site of the martyrdom of the Bab, there is a building on it now. That building has to be demolished so that we acquire that piece of property. The old construction, that wall on which the Bab was suspended with Ali Muhammad Zunuzi, this is all gone. It is demolished. But the site is there, but on the side there is a building. So to acquire this first, to demolish the building, to try and construct something if it is possible, to construct something which was similar to what it was, and for then the Baha'is to go there and visit. See, many, many changes have to occur in Iran before we can do this. The transfer of the remains of the wife of the Bab, which was in Shiraz, to transfer her remains, to bring it to the Baha'i cemetery or to a special property dedicated to the wife of the Bab, to dedicate to the wife of the Bab, and to construct something beautiful for her. All these things are not possible now. But, again, I repeat, these are all commitments of the House of Justice that they consider these to be close to their hearts. As soon as circumstances permit, they will go ahead. You can be sure. And of course there are so many other. I have given explanations. I don't need to go into more details because of the time element. The quadrupling of the number of national assemblies, this is very clear. It is the number of assemblies that have to be increased. And we have given the statistical information. The multiplying the number of national Haziratul Qudses and their establishment in the chief cities and so on, that is also very clear. It means how many new national Baha'i centers have to be acquired and constructed. Number 19 and number 20 have to do with the framing of constitutions, in other words, the adoption of bylaws and declarations of trust by national spiritual assemblies, as well as the incorporation of national assemblies. Now, what is the meaning of incorporations? Incorporations can be either national or local. The incorporation, a national incorporation, means that the national assembly goes to the country and says, we are an elected body of the National Spiritual Assembly. This has happened in Italy. It has happened in probably in most of the countries that you represent. They go to the country and they say, we are a National Spiritual Assembly of the Baha'i community. We would like to register ourselves as an association of the Baha'is and be recognized as a legal entity with legal personality in order to be able to acquire property and register such properties in our name. So this is called a legal incorporation. The government says, what is your constitution? Here is our constitution. And then they read the constitution, they see nothing wrong with it against the laws of the country. They accept the National Spiritual Assembly and they give a certificate to the National Assembly that you are an incorporated, a registered legal body. You can go to court, you can defend yourself in court as a legal person, as a legal personality. So this is the meaning of incorporation. You have national incorporation and you have local incorporation. Shoghi Effendi wanted both. Wanted national assemblies to be incorporated as soon as circumstances would permit, as well as, of course, local assemblies. The goal is establishment of 6 national Baha'i publishing trusts. Now, this national Baha'i publishing trust, the word trust is used here in the sense not, it doesn't mean that the word trust must be used. You can call it national Baha'i company. You can call it, Baha'i publishing company. You can call it Baha'i publishing association. The word trust was used by Shoghi Effendi because he liked so much the way that the British publishing committee was able to go to the British government and incorporate itself. So he recommended the word trust in this case. And if we can preserve it, so much the better. But the reality of it is to be able to have a body which is the National Spiritual Assembly itself, incorporated a second time, but this time as a body with the permission to publish, a publishing house. So instead of calling itself National Spiritual Assembly - Publishing House, he says it's better to call it Baha'i Publishing Trust. But it is really, in effect, the National Spiritual Assembly itself. Then the next item is the establishment of 6 national Baha'i... The next one is participation by women of Persia and the membership of national and local assemblies. This goal was very dear to the heart of Shoghi Effendi. He wanted this to happen. Abdul Baha wanted it to happen. But then towards the end of his life, Shoghi Effendi said the time had come. And the Baha'is in Iran could... become members of national and local spiritual assemblies. And as you see, I have put here that there were other countries in the East, Egypt, Sudan, Tunisia, Libya, Arabian Peninsula, Jordan, Lebanon, Turkey. Some of them had already done this, but Iran had not yet done it. Some of these countries, immediately as soon as Iran did it, they also did it. The next one is the establishment of 7 Israel branches of national spiritual assemblies. Now, this requires some explanation. What does Shoghi Effendi mean by having Israel branches. Shoghi Effendi saw that we had properties, of course, in the Holy Land. He did not want these properties to be in the name only of one legal entity. Who was the legal entity in the days of Shoghi Effendi? It was himself, guardian of the Baha'i faith. In the days of Abdul Baha, who was the legal entity to acquire property and register property in that name? It was Abdul Baha himself. So, for example, if you go to the Haifa, see the Baha'i Cemetery in Haifa, if you go and look in the records of the land registry in Haifa, you see that the Baha'i Cemetery in Haifa is registered in the name of Abbas Effendi, son of Hussein Ali, Baha'u'llah. It is still, at this time, registered in the name of Abdul Baha, you see. Now, of course, the House of Justice has taken action to transfer all these names into the names either the Baha'i World Center or one of the Israel branches. Now, the Israel branches. Shoghi Effendi started by establishing Palestine branches of national assemblies. That was the first step that he took. How did he do it? He studied the laws in Palestine under the British mandate, and he saw that there was a possibility of having what is known today in Israel as friendly societies. Friendly societies. A friendly society is an association of people who do not have any political intentions. Their only purpose is to acquire property and register them in their own name. They have to have a set of bylaws, and it was very simple to draw a set of a page and a half of bylaws. Shoghi Effendi drew that up. And he said, now here is an association. The name of the association is National Spiritual Assembly of the Baha'is of the United States and Canada - Palestine Branch. In other words, the National Spiritual Assembly, any given national assembly, the US or the British or any national assembly in the world, had a branch of its own in the Holy Land. This is what it means, Palestine branch. Who was the Palestine branch? It was himself. He and his secretary, whoever was his secretary at the time. So he signed as president of this friendly society, and his secretary as secretary of the friendly society. And they had this bylaws, and they went to the government and registered this association as what has this title, National Spiritual Assembly of the Baha'is of, let us say, Canada, National Spiritual Assembly of the Baha'is of Germany, National Spiritual Assembly of the Baha'is of Italy, or whatever it was, Palestine branch. When Israel was changed, the Holy Land was changed, and the mandate came to an end, and it became Israel, then instead of Palestine branch, he had to put Israel branch, because the name of the country had now changed. So it became Israel branch. So he continued the same system with other national spiritual assemblies. And he said that all the properties in the Holy Land will be eventually transferred in the names of national spiritual assemblies with their Israel branches. He went as far as registering an association or a friendly society called National Spiritual Assemblies of the Baha'is of Iran - Israel branch. Who is representing the Israeli branch? Shoghi Effendi, with his secretary. And he transferred on Mark Carmel, Bob, on the in the name of the Baha'is of Iran, Israel, Christ. And it is now in that, in the name of the Iran. He used to jokingly say, the Israel government. So he took another step in his comments to the friends. He used to say, actually, he actually wrote this in one of his letters. He said that it was not only his hope and vision that the properties in the Holy Land will be transferred in the name of national spiritual assemblies in this way, but he hoped, and this is a very important point for you to remember, that the holy places in Iran, the holy places in Iraq, the holy places in Turkey, associated with Baha'u'llah, will in the long run be also registered in the names of national spiritual assemblies throughout the world. So that, for example, your national spiritual assembly, wherever you come from, will have in its name properties one day in the Holy Land, some piece of land or some piece of property in Turkey, some piece of property in Iraq, and some property in Iran. This was his vision. So that the holy places and the historic sites of the Baha'i world will be in the name of the different national spiritual assemblies throughout the world. That was his hope, his vision. And you can be sure that the House of Justice considers all these hopes, all these plans of Shoghi Effendi to be sacred and to be part and parcel of their own commitments. The next item is establishment of a national Baha'i printing press in Tehran. Of course, this was not possible, because to have a national printing press, you have to have a special permission from the government, and the government will never give a special permission to the National Assembly to have the printing press. But they continued to have unofficially, of course, ways and means to print and publish and circulate Baha'i literature. Reinforcement of the ties binding the Baha'i world community to the United Nations. This is something that you are all familiar with, and you know how active we are in New York, in Geneva, through the different agencies that we have, in order to become members of UNDP, of UNICEF, of UNIFEM, of WHO, WFO, and so on. And we have status as a non-governmental organization, but international non-governmental organization, because you have national NGOs and you have international NGOs. Okay, the next item is inclusion of 11 republics comprised within the Union of the Soviet Republics. Now, it was impossible at that time to send any pioneers to these countries, and so this matter remained pending until there was a change in the government in the Soviet, when this so-called Iron Curtain was removed. And this took some time. It was till 1990, until it was possible, when the regime in the Soviet Republic was, when it collapsed, it was possible then for pioneers to go. As soon as it was possible, pioneers rushed to these countries, to these republics. And now, as you know, in all these republics, we now have national spiritual assemblies. And finally, the convocation of a World Congress in the Garden of Rizwan. Now, this question of the convocation of a World Congress in Baghdad was something that, of course, inspired the imagination of Baha'is when this goal was announced by the Guardian We hope that maybe something will happen in Iraq and we'll be able to have this World Congress in 1963 there. But of course it did not happen. Just as in Iran there was no change, in Iraq there was no change at that time. In the Soviet Union there was no change at the time of the passing of Shoghi Effendi. It happened later. And this thing is still pending. Of course, 1963 came and the Congress had to be held somewhere. It could not be held in Baghdad. It had to be held somewhere else. The logical place, the hands of the Boers decided, would be London, because Shoghi Effendi was already buried there, and the friends were longing, in any case, to go and visit the resting place of Shoghi Effendi. So they thought the logical place would be London. And that's where the Congress was held in 1963. And so for the first time in the history of the Baha'i faith, we had nearly 7,000 Baha'is coming from all over the world attending this World Congress. And they all were able to visit the resting place of Shoghi Effendi and pay their respects to the guardian of the Baha'i faith at that time. It was a very moving experience for all Baha'is. And those of us, I don't know how many of you were present at this Congress. There, 1, 2, 3. If you allow me, I'll count myself. 4 of us were present at this Congress. The father of Margaret Appa was a member of the National Spiritual Assembly of the British Isles at that time. And he was chosen by the National Spiritual Assembly to be the master of ceremonies for the Congress. And he was quite often holding the loudspeaker in his hand and making announcements to the friends about the arrangements, the physical arrangements and so on. It was a very moving experience. All the hands of the cause were there. And for the first time, the members of the Universal House of Justice, who had just been elected in Haifa, all of the 9 members were able to attend. And on a special occasion, they were introduced to the Congress, and they all stood up there. And you can imagine how many eyes shed tears as they looked at an institution that was ordained in the Kitab-e Aqdas, and it was the primary purpose of Shoghi Effendi to establish throughout his period of guardianship. Now this, as far as the 27 objectives are concerned, I think we have covered now these objectives, and I have given you explanations, appropriate explanations, I hope, on what they meant and what had to happen. Now during this period, Shoghi Effendi, as I told you before, had the idea of national assemblies spinning off, national assemblies coming into existence in the course of the plan. So here he was with 12 national assemblies at the beginning. Now it's 1956. 3 years have passed. So Shoghi Effendi, what does he do? He says the time has come now for 3 new national assemblies to be added to the number of 12. So instead of 12, we will have 15. And did he choose? He chose Africa. He took the whole continent of Africa. He saw there was only one National Spiritual Assembly there. It's not carrying on. He saw that there was only one National Assembly there, which was the National Assembly of Egypt and the Sudan. That was the only one there. So what he did was, he took this National Assembly and enlarged its area of jurisdiction, and said the name, instead of being Egypt and the Sudan, will become the National Spiritual Assembly of a larger region, and it will be Northeast Africa. But the number had not changed. It was still 12. Then he took the rest of Africa and he divided it into three big regions. In the south, he had one big regional national assembly. The name of it was South and West Africa. And it comprised nearly 15 countries and islands. Then he took, between South Africa and Northeast Africa, he took East Africa and Central Africa, countries such as the Congo, such as Chad, such as Central African Republic, such as other countries like Brazzaville, Congo, the French Congo, Congo Brazzaville, Congo Kinshasa, which was Congo Leopoldville, and so on. He took all this whole section and called it Central and East Africa. So we had at the top, we had Northeast Africa, which extended, even included Libya, and included Abyssinia, included Ethiopia, all that section. We had down there South Africa, and we had in the center East and Central Africa. And then the rest of the country, the rest of the continent, which was all the way from Cameroon, all along the coast, all the way up to Tunisia, 25 countries, and anything in between, he called it Northwest Africa. Big region. It had 25 countries included. He called these regional national assemblies as interim national assemblies. Regional interim national assemblies. In other words, they were temporary, intermediary stage or stages in the final stage, which would be the independent national, the independent country itself having its own national assembly. So this is the first thing that happened during the 10-year crusade, the first spinning off. Then 1 year later, now this is now 1957, then he added 13 new national spiritual assemblies. He looked at the rest of the world and he created 13 new national spiritual assemblies. So we had 13 new national assemblies there, plus 3, it became 16, plus 12, it became 28. So when Shoghi Effendi passed away, there were 28 national spiritual assemblies at Rizwan, 1957. And what did Shoghi Effendi do? He sat down and he wrote a special Rizwan message for each of these national spiritual assemblies. It was as if he was telling them goodbye. It is heartrending to read those messages of the Guardian to these national assemblies. He did not say that this is going to be my last message, obviously. But when you read the message, you see that it's as if he is expressing all his hopes, all his aspirations for these national assemblies, how they should develop. And I tried somehow to include parts of these things in these notes so that you will have an understanding of how these subsidiary NSAs with their subsidiary national plans came into existence. Now, there is a section also in these notes about the difference, or the differences on page 14, the differences of the 10-year crusade when you compare the 10-year crusade to other previous national plans. I tried to include for you the differences. For example, Choge Effendi's World Crusade, paragraph 2 of page 14, differed from the first and second seven-year plan of the North American community because its scope was now worldwide. 10 of the objectives had been assigned to by him as responsibilities of the World Center. Then he had Hands of the Cause, which he didn't have before. So he had asked Hands of the Cause to consult on his behalf with these national spiritual assemblies. This did not exist before, and act as his representatives in conferences that were held in order to launch these the 10-year crusade. And then he had this question of collaboration. All these lines that you see in his maps, each of the 12, there are certain lines that start from these generals, from these bases of the work of the 10-year crusade, to see where the pioneers should go, what responsibilities have been assigned to them, and what they should do. This sort of collaboration between national assemblies was something also new, except for those 2 years of the African campaign, which was just the beginning of that process. And the way that he really, towards the end of his life, he said there, at the midway point of the 10-year crusade, there should be again continental conferences to be held. And he wanted the Baha'is to know each other, to mix with each other. All this was a preparation. When it was only with the benefit of hindsight, after that these things happened, and we looked back, we understood that that's what his purpose was. His purpose was for the Baha'i world to know each other at these conferences. Because all these were preparations. The 10-year crusade was the last stage in his preparations for the election of the Universal House of Justice. He wanted the Baha'i world to mix with each other, to know each other, to associate with each other. So this was all the when you see the differences between the 10-year plan and previous plans. Then on pages 15, 16, and 17, I have outlined for you messages that show that he knew that his time was very close. And he wanted the Baha'is to realize this, that the future of the cause depended on them. And as I already told you, this message of June of 1957, I have quoted it on page 16, at the top of page 16, June 4, 1957. And I have tried to pick up the main sentences of this message to show you how Shoghi Effendi was now telling the Baha'i world, friends, you have to do it yourselves. I have done what I could. From now on, you should do it yourselves. I remember this message of June 4, 1957, when a copy was received in our home when we were in Kampala. And I was sitting with Yolette's father, Mr. Banani, and we were reading this message together. And the way that the language that Shoghi Effendi has used in this message, that, for example, I'll read you this particular message, this particular sentence, because it's very important. It's the last few lines of that first paragraph on page 16. The security of our precious faith, the preservation of the spiritual health of Baha'i communities, the vitality of the faith of its individual members, the proper functioning of its laboriously erected institutions, the fruition of its worldwide enterprises, and the fulfillment of its ultimate destiny are all directly dependent on the befitting discharge of the weighty responsibilities resting upon the members of these two institutions. The two institutions, when you read the message, the full message, he is referring to the hands of the cause of God throughout the world and the national spiritual assemblies throughout the world. In other words, what he's saying is, friends, all these things, which includes the fruition of the work of the faith throughout the world, which includes the fulfillment of the destiny of the faith of Baha'u'llah throughout the world, this depends now not on me. It depends on collaboration between the hands and the National Spiritual Assemblies. And I remember, as we read this message with Mr. Banani, he looked at me and I looked at him. We were sitting at the table together. And we both had the same feeling. The feeling was that this was like a will and testament of Shoghi Effendi. That it certainly, you could smell something here. The scent was that he was implying that I'm not going to be with you anymore. This was in June of 1957. And the dear heart of this hand of the cause, Mr. Banani, sensed this feeling, this impression that Shoghi Effendi wanted to give us. It was only after the passing of Shoghi Effendi that we both remembered this conversation we had at the table as we read this very moving message of the Guardian. I want you to read this 15, 16, 17 very carefully. The following section we will discuss tomorrow, but I want you to look at them very carefully during your studies. Duties incumbent upon the National Assembly. And the following sections, duties on the individual believer, and so on and so forth. I want you to read those. It is as if these have been gleaned from his last messages to these national spiritual assemblies. These points that you find here, we have gleaned them, we have pulled them out from these last farewell messages. And you can see what he's telling the Baha'i world and how applicable some of these things are today for each one of us. That's it for today.
Thank you, Mr. Nakhchavani, very much. Please don't forget to put your question on this box. And now we have our break until 11:30.